Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable. The Supreme Court on Thursday rejected President Donald Trump's effort to end legal protections for 650,000 young immigrants, a stunning rebuke to the president in the midst of his reelection campaign. For now, those immigrants retain their protection from deportation and their authorization to work in the United States. The outcome seems certain to elevate the issue in Trump's campaign, given the anti-immigrant rhetoric of his first presidential run in 2016 and immigration restrictions his administration has imposed since then. Chief Justice John Roberts, joined by his four liberal colleagues, wrote for the court that the administration did not pursue the end of the program properly. Then, just moments ago, the president took to Twitter, and this is what he said. These horrible and politically charged decisions come out of the Supreme Court are shotgun blasts into the face of people that are proud to call themselves Republicans or conservatives. We need more justices, or we will lose our Second Amendment and everything else. Vote Trump 2020. A moment later, a minute and a half later, actually, he tweeted this. Do you get the impression that the Supreme Court doesn't like me? To discuss this more, we WAMC's Alan Chartok is back. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning again, Joe.
And we are also thrilled to welcome an old friend who has not been with us for a while, which we will explain why in just a second. But it's Albany Law School Professor Sarah Rogerson, who directs the Immigration Law Clinic. Sarah, I can't even begin to tell you how much we've missed you.
Same. I feel exactly the same.
But you are, but you were doing great work. You were running for school board, and you won. And since that race is now over this week, we can have you back on the air legally, which is great.
That's right.
All right.
And by the way, congratulations, Sarah.
Yeah, that's really terrific.
Thank you.
Now Sarah's going to be
Thanks
with us
very
on the.
Much.
Sarah's going to be with us on the panel tomorrow, but I did want to spend some time. Also, another note that the governor of New York will be speaking on this, as well as, of course, the state's response to coronavirus at 11:30, and we'll be taking that live. But in the meantime, I wanted to get everyone's thoughts on this. Sarah, you know, we were talking, Alan and the group, right as this decision came down and before we went over to NPR coverage, of what a surprise this was. I'm interested in how much of a surprise it was to you.
Well, judging from my Twitter feed, and I follow hundreds of immigration scholars, activists, lawyers, everyone is stunned. It's we're uniformly, and I mean, this follows, we were following very closely the oral arguments in the Supreme Court, and it the justices asked tough questions that were signaling mixed, you know, projections, quite honestly, about what we might see in this opinion. And people are feeling very nervous about it. I mean, I've been nervous about this program since President Obama announced it, but certainly this case is just loaded. As we speak, there are people who are training immigration lawyers. The staff attorney at our clinic is currently in a training to discuss, like, what do we tell our clients? What do we tell our DACA recipients if the Supreme Court doesn't do the right thing? We've been bracing for impact for several months, and I can't even – it's a relief for us, and I just can't even imagine what a relief it must be for all of the DACA recipients in America.
On your Twitter feed, you said it started with the movement, all hail those who dream. Alan, of course, the big story here politically and as much as political as the Supreme Court is, a 5-4 decision, Justice John Roberts writing the majority opinion.
You know, Joe, I'm not terribly surprised about in looking back. I must say, you know, this has been a big surprise for everybody that they came down this way and not 5-4 the other way, except that Roberts is a very smart man. He clearly is a conservative. He clearly wants to stay with, you know, his conservative credentials. On the other hand, he was appointed by George W. Bush. And George W. Bush and Papa Bush had no use for this guy Trump. So he's carrying a certain amount of water, I believe, you know, for them, for the progressive, if not progressive, for the stable Republicans in the party. And this is a shot, in my mind, at this president. I think that that's a real possibility from a political point of view. And I, you know, I got to tell you, when he came out and saved the health care program, it was also of great momentum for the, you know, it's a bad word, but he was terrifically interested in keeping stability in this government. And I think he's done that again. He took a look at this decision and he said, we don't want to be on the wrong side of this one, just like we didn't want to be on the wrong side of health care.
Sarah, one of the things that was discussed in the NPR coverage that I found was interesting is that we have this decision now, but Congress still has a great deal to say on this issue. And I'm wondering, so where does that go and what are we waiting for there?
Well, the Roberts opinion really focused on the Administrative Procedure Act and this discretionary element of what the executive can do because DACA was an executive initiative under the Obama administration. So that's why we're in this land of the law where we are in the Supreme Court opinion to begin with, because it's not a ruling on whether or not the program is actually lawful. It's a ruling on whether what Trump did with it was within was a decision that abided by the Administrative Procedure Act. So a way to get out from under all of that is, well, most of it, is for Congress to act. Comprehensive immigration reform is long overdue. This is not the climate to do it in. This is not the Congress to do it with, quite frankly. But depending on what happens in November, we could see something that has been that we've been waiting for decades. If Democrats are able to control both houses, I think we could see DACA become permanent. DAPA, the program for parents of these children, which affects millions more people, might be reinstituted. And now we have a lot of litigation to learn from the mistakes as it was rolled out so that Congress might be able to craft something that is resistant to challenge.
Alan?
Well, I just wanted to ask Sarah whether or not she thought Mitch McConnell would be weighing in. Obviously, you're exactly right, Sarah. This isn't going to happen in the Republican-controlled Senate. That's for sure. But McConnell is a key player here. He's got to protect a lot of his senators. And obviously, the Trump people, I believe, are breathing some kind of sigh of relief. Because if they had to send all of these people back to the countries that they came from when they were 6 years old or 5 years old, it would have been very embarrassing for them. So to some degree, this lets them off the hook. Despa?
I don't know. I wish I could agree with that, but honestly, they're attacking. This administration is still attacking immigrants in the background.
Yeah, they want the cake and eat it.
They're eviscerating asylum protections, which have been the hallowed ground of humanitarian immigration protections since World War II. It's deeply distressing what's happening, what has been happening in immigration, and it's still happening now. It's sort of, I think they're taking advantage of the headlines shifting to coronavirus and racial tensions to go even more aggressive when it comes to dismantling immigration protection. So I don't think, I think I read a story today that the destruction of immigration is what's resonating with that base. I don't think they care about any optics of treating human beings with cruelty and disdain, including children who are still being abused in detention facilities. Because the sick thing is that there's a lot of people who want to see that happen, especially when black and brown bodies are concerned.
When we were talking early in the discussion, you were saying that your staff and others around the country of immigration advocates and activists were working hard to figure out what happened if this decision went the other way. So what work are you all doing now that the decision has gone this way?
The minute the decision hit, my staff attorney emailed me and said, we're going to reach out to our clients first to let them know where they stand, because we had been sending out advisals saying, you know, look, this is before the Supreme Court. Here are some strategies, right? We were ramping up as soon as people were able to apply for renewal, because it's a 2-year program. We were encouraging applicants, you know, to get all their paperwork together so that basically on the day that they were first eligible to file, we would be able to file. For some, even if they had some time remaining on their current application, we were still encouraging them to apply for renewal so that they could start that 2-year window over again and hopefully make it through this administration, right? It became a game of math for us. We've had some cases denied in terms of renewals. Typically, that can only happen if somebody has become ineligible. It's very rare. We've only had one case in all of the years that we've been representing these folks where that happened. So other than that, I mean, 90% of DACA applicants are employed, right? So we were just essentially giving them regular reminders to renew and making sure that they understood what type of activities would render them ineligible to continue in the program. As I said, leading up to the opinion, we were sort of trying not to alarm them, but do our duty as attorneys to explain that depending on what happened with this decision, we would have to guide them through a different process. But we were even thinking about, you know, what would be the legal maneuvering that would happen in terms of how deportations would be effectuated. Because remember, these people gave up all of their personal information to apply to this program on a promise that they wouldn't be deported. It's prosecutorial discretion, essentially, which means a promise from the government not to deport you. And it comes with a benefit, which is what got us to the Supreme Court opinion, because you can't take away a benefit like that without going through certain procedures. Now the advice will be different. Of course, it doesn't mean that DACA is safe. It just means that the most recent attempt to dismantle it wasn't done correctly. And now they have a blueprint for how to do it correctly if they choose to in the future. So it just puts so much more weight on what's going to happen in November.
And on that point, Nina Totenberg, speaking on NPR just a few moments ago, was basically saying, yes, that this becomes an election issue because there would be no way to do anything meaningful between now and the first of the year. But obviously, if the president wins re-election, then it's of great concern.
Yep. Massive.
Yep.
I mean, he'll double down.
Alan?
Well, if you read the opinion, and I can only tell you what I've been hearing rather than reading it, it's clear that this is not definitive, and I think Sarah's exactly right. This could be a very dangerous beginning of yet another Trumpian attempt at doing away with this.
You know, Alan, and we just have a couple of minutes left, but I'm curious of just the, again, back to the political on this. We had the decision on Monday regarding from the Supreme Court regarding the fact that those in the LGBTQ community could not be fired from their jobs. And then there is this decision. There is the Bolton book. There is coronavirus. There is the racial unrest in this country. There is the economic factor. But just look at the things that I mentioned at the beginning of the list. This has not been a good week for the president.
No. Look, this president relies on the racist element in this country who really don't want blacks and browns running them. And are afraid of it, and the appeal has been blatant from this president to those folks. We know it. But there is a question of right and wrong. And many people, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, look at a decision like this and they say, what's right and what's wrong? So Roberts has been, in my opinion, has been very smart about being on the right side of what's right. And he gets a lot of credit for it.
To the tweet that the president put out just about 15 minutes ago, do you get the impression that the Supreme Court doesn't like me? I mean, we...
Four of them like them.
Yeah. But it's just, it's a weird way of thinking, right, Sarah? I mean, it's just, it's odd to even think that.
Yeah, who cares? I mean, like, this isn't a high school, popularity contest. This is the United States. So, what matters is the law. And he's doing what he does. And quite honestly, you know, if they want to waste the American people's time putting together garbage policies that are just going to be struck down by their own Supreme Court that they created themselves, then shame on them.
Well, are we sure that when he opposes policy, that he really gives a damn what they do? Rather, it's the appearance of which side he's on that's much more important than whether DACA lives or dies his base.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very of the moment. It's not a presidency for the ages. It's a presidency for an ego. And I, for one, am just beyond weary of it. And today is relief on almost a metaphysical level, I think, for a lot of us in immigration land, because it has been so hard. We watch the people. Go, right. He never sees what happens.
We have to go, unfortunately. But Albany Law School Professor Sarah Rogerson, who directs the Immigration Law Clinic, you'll be back with us tomorrow on the roundtable panel. Alan, as will you. I thank you both very much for the discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.